Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Chatham Community Church. My name is Jaime. I'm one of the pastors here, and I'm so glad that you're here with us this morning. Way back, in what feels like a lifetime ago, I drove out to a multi-day off-site training with the company I was working for. I was really excited to be at this training. They had just redone the curriculum, and I was part of the first group that was going to get to go through this new curriculum, and we were set to give feedback and help continue to develop it so it would be good for the company for the long run. I arrived at the location just a little bit before start time, and I opened up my trunk. I started to unpack all the things that I had brought, and it was like, all right, backpack with laptop, my notebook, books that I needed, material I needed for the training, check. Bag with board games. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Chatham Community Church. My name is Jaime. I'm one of the pastors here, and I'm so glad that you're here with us this morning. Way back, in what feels like a lifetime ago, I drove out to a multi-day off-site training with the company I was working for. I was really excited to be at this training. They had just redone the curriculum, and I was part of the first group that was going to get to go through this new curriculum, and we were set to give feedback and help continue to develop it so it would be good for the company for the long run. I arrived at the location just a little bit before start time, and I opened up my trunk. I started to unpack all the things that I had brought, and it was like, all right, backpack with laptop, my notebook, books that I needed, material I needed for the training, check. Bag with board games, because we had some free time and I wanted to play, check. Bag with snacks to share, check. And then I went to grab something else and realized there was nothing else in my trunk. Something was missing. I'd forgotten to bring my suitcase with all my clothes and my toiletries, which is one of, if not the most important thing one needs at a 3 to 4 day work training. I'd packed it. I'd remembered packing it, but I neglected it when I was loading the car. I guess I was caught up in all the other things I needed to bring, and I just assumed that I had it. I ended up driving back and a few hours, and someone met me along the way with my suitcase, but I missed the opening session of this first-time training, and I missed the first meal. It's easy to slip into assuming that we've got the obvious things, that we always have them with us, only to realize along the line that we've either forgotten or neglected or left them behind. Sometimes when that happens, it comes at no cost to go get them, to go recapture them or reclaim them or bring them along with us. But sometimes we may end up missing good opportunities for us, but also opportunities to do good for others. You may have noticed in the passage that we just read from 1 John that the word love shows up quite a bit. In fact, it shows up over 20 times. We may get to the point in listening to the passage where we're like, all right, John, we get it. Love. Love is important. It's a big deal for God. It's a big deal for us. We get it. Christians have been talking about love for the whole time. Just cool it. We can cool it on the love talk. We've got this. But here's an honest question that I want you to reflect on. How many of you have thought about love during this political season? And how often has love been part of your thoughts or of your conversations? When I think about that question, I'm not happy with my response to it. I'm not happy with how often I've forgotten it and how easy it's been to forget about love at such an important and critical time for our nation, for our society, for our community. So as we head towards the last couple of sermons in this Kingdom People series, we're going to spend today talking about love. Because if anything is going to inform how Kingdom people, people who've been called by God into his kingdom, followers of Jesus, how we're going to approach the political climate and its aftermath, if anything is going to inform that approach, it's got to be love. Love is the cornerstone of how we bring about God's goodness as kingdom people, God's grace as kingdom people, God's justice as kingdom people, God's joy as kingdom people, God's peace as kingdom people, and so much more. Wherever we go, whatever we do, and whoever we interact with, we can't afford to leave love behind. Part of the reason John uses the word love so much in this passage is because the kind of love he's talking about was not the most important virtue in that society. It was not the most important virtue in the first century world. There were other things, there were other virtues that came first or were more important than the kind of love that John is talking about. So part of what John's doing is John is reframing, John is reorganizing categories for his audience and for us as well, especially for a community that's facing challenges, both internal and external, as they're trying to live out this new emerging idea of being kingdom people, of being people who are following the risen Jesus. He's calling these people to live first and foremost in and out of love. He's calling them to have love be part of everything they do. And that call still rings true today. And it is especially necessary to remember and reclaim that virtue as primary, that love is the thing that drives us as we process this political season and as we engage in its aftermath, especially as we approach a holiday season that many of us are already dreading and feeling anxious about, considering who we might be around a table with. It is important that we hear the call to love once again. Here are a few things that John tells us in this passage about love. He tells us that love starts with God. The passage tells us that love comes from God and that God is love. Love is inextricably linked to who God is. It is part of God's very nature. You cannot detach love from God and expect to know or experience the fullness of the love that John is talking about. God is the source of love. Friends, without God, love doesn't exist, and when we try to define or experience or engage with love apart from God, we are simply engaging and experiencing things that are calling themselves love, but fail at some point or another because they can't fully demonstrate what love is, because you can't fully demonstrate what love is without the source of love, without God. This love that John talks about, this love that is at the core of who God is a visible love. It is a demonstrable love. It is a demonstrated and active love. God's creative act is born out of love. There were other ancient creation myths that talked about how the world came to be, and it did not come out of love in those ancient creative myths. It came out of all sorts of other things. In some of those ancient creation myths, the world was made, people were made, things were made out of conflict between the gods. But in the ancient Hebrew scriptures, what you see is God making out of love, and you see it evidenced when it says that God made humanity in his image and in his likeness. You see it demonstrated in his caring for humanity. You see it demonstrated in his trusting of humanity with the care of all of his creation. All those things evidence that God's creation was born out of love. But this idea that love is inextricably linked to God is not only found in creation, it's also found at the cross and the resurrection. What you see in the life of Jesus is God's love being active in his rescue of humanity. You have love most perfectly embodied in Jesus. You see it in his teachings. You see it in his interactions. You feel it as he engages with people, as he does miracles. You see it as he hangs on the cross. His very sacrifice is born out of love. Love for everyone, even love for the people who crucified him. At the cross and at the resurrection, out of love, the world was changed. Let me say that again. At the cross and at the resurrection, the world was changed. And what changed the world was driven by love. It was born out of love. Love is at the core of who God is. But it doesn't stop there. Love is also at the core of who God says we are. Though our translation of the first part of the passage, when we heard it read, said, "Dear friends," it would be equally accurate and perhaps more true to the text to have translated it as not "dear friends," but "beloved." After all, the word there in Greek has the same root as the word we translate as love in every other part of the passage. The Spirit has inspired John to call this community that he's writing to beloved. Beloved, recipients of love, made in love, identified as those who are loved because God loves the people he created. God loved the people he created in the first century. God loves the people he created who are living here and now. He loves you and I. He wants all of us to be kingdom people. And that desire is born out of love because he wants us to live into the love that he has for us, the love that he made us with, the love with which he calls us. He wants us to live as ones who are beloved. To be beloved is a core part of our identity according to God. The one who has made us in love names us as loved. He calls us beloved. Now, all of us have names. We have names that we've been given at birth, but we have other ways that we've been referred to throughout our lives. In fact, some of us have ways that we refer to ourselves as. There are things that we say to each other, say to ourselves as we look in the mirror. There are things that ring through our head, either in our voice or in the voices of others. And let's be honest, not all of those names or labels are good. Not all of those names or label are good. But God calls us beloved. And God says that that is the most important thing about us, that we are beloved. So I want to give you an opportunity today to do some replacing, to do some reframing, to do some reorganizing, to embrace this idea that you are beloved. I'm going to invite you to do something called a breath prayer. So what you're going to do is you're going to take a breath in, and as you breathe in, you are either going to say or in your mind or vocally a phrase, and as you breathe out, you will say another one. As you breathe in, I want you to say, God has called me beloved. Let's practice that. Go ahead, breathe in. God has called me beloved. And then as you breathe out, I want you to move beyond acknowledging what God has called you to owning it. I want you to say, I am beloved. So go ahead, breathe in. God has called me beloved. Breathe out. I am beloved. Breathe in. God has called me beloved. Breathe out. I am beloved. You are beloved. It is at the core of who God says you are. And I know that's hard for some of us to believe. It's hard for some of us to own. And part of that is because under the label of love, under the banner of something called love, we've experienced or seen so many non-loving and even hurtful things that we've grown to hold love with some degree of suspicion. And if God is love, then it's inevitable that we might hold God with some degree of suspicion. Sure, God loves us, but when's the other shoe going to drop? What's waiting around the corner? When's the hammer going to fall? When is he going to fail? Sure, God loves us. Sure, God loves me, but you may fill in the blank whatever way you feel, whatever way feels true to you in your experience. And John is getting at some of these fears, some of these things when he talks about the reliability of God's love and how there is no fear in love. He talks about fear having to do with punishment. It is this sense that something bad is waiting around the corner. That's what fear is, that something in the future is waiting that is not good. So therefore, you can't let your guard down. You're not safe. You can't trust. Friends, that's just not a good life. That's not a way to live. Here's the thing with God. The only thing waiting around the corner with God's love is more of God's love. That's what's waiting around the corner. The thing waiting around the corner when it comes to God's love is more of God's love. There is no but when it comes to God's love for us. You are seen. You are valued. You are beloved. You are worth his love. You are safe in his love. He has deemed us intrinsically with intrinsic worth. There is no but when it comes to God's love for us. So much of how our world works is driven with fear by fear. And we see so much of that truly during the political season. So much of the political conversation is driven by fear. There has got to be something better, because where fear leaves us, and we know that, is nowhere good. Where it takes us is nowhere good. How we act in light of it is nothing good. There has got to be something better. It's God's love. So let yourself receive God's love. It's a better way to live, not just in these days, but every day. It brings blessing to you. That's where it leads. It brings blessing to those around you. It ushers in the good life that you and I were made for. Our world needs a different approach. It needs a different approach. And you and I have access to it. We must receive it first so that we can offer it with integrity. So receive God's love. Let it replace whatever traces of fear live inside of you, and then share it with everything else. Because here's the thing, God's love calls for a response. Now you'd think that when John is talking about God's love, and when John is talking about what comes after God's love, he'd say that the way to respond to God's love is by loving God. And I don't think he's saying that we shouldn't love God in response to God's love for us, but note that what he writes in this text is that since God loves us, he doesn't write we ought to love God. He writes we ought to love one another. God's love calls for a response, and it's to love one another. Why? Because the people in front of us give us opportunities to show that kind of recognizable love that is true of God. They give us opportunities to move first, like God did. When things are difficult or stuck, God moved first to rescue humanity out of love. And he gives us those opportunities when he invites us to love the people around us. The people around us give us opportunities to practice the kind of giving love that God has modeled for us time and time again, and most perfectly in Jesus. When we love one another, when we love the people around us, we demonstrate God's love for them. When we love them, it's as if God is saying to them, I love you. They get to experience some of God's love through us. God's love calls for a response, and that response is to love one another. Now, there are different ways, different forms to act in loving ways, but there is always a way to do it. There is always a way to act in love. There is always a way to be guided by love. There is no situation in which love is not an option and doesn't provide a path forward, no matter what we are told. There is no facet of life in which love is not just an option, but it's the best option. Love is the best alternative. And that includes issues connected to politics. Hear me say it. Love is the best option we have to engage, not just in the political conversation and its aftermath, but in politics in general and how we function as a society. It's striking, folks. Not just how absent love seems to be in our political conversations and in the political discourse, but how easily we seem to set it aside. How easily we seem to deem it irrelevant. Some of us say things like, well, love just doesn't seem to work for politics. Or we may say things like, we need other things now, because love just isn't enough. But friends, here's the truth. Love saved you. Love saved me. Love saved us. Love was enough to save the world. It is still enough to save the world. There is nothing more important than that. And if love was enough for the most important things, it most certainly is enough for things like politics and every other situation in our lives. In my kitchen, there is a tool that looks like this one, except it is much older and worn. It's called a mezzaluna, or a rocking tea knife, and it belonged to my great grandmother Rose. You heard that right? This belonged to my great grandmother Rose. She would use it when, especially as she got older, to be able to rock back and forth and cut things when she didn't have sort of the natural kind of strength that's required with certain kinds of uses of knives, and it was effective then. I've inherited it since then, and I still use it, and it still works. That knife, that rocking tea knife, has been in my family for decades. And all along those decades, every generation has had other kitchen tools, other tools and instruments that claim to do the things that Grandma Rose's Mezzaluna does. And in fact, some of them do those things. But without fail, every one of them has broken down. Every one of them has become obsolete. But you know what hasn't failed and has never become obsolete? Grandma Rose's Mezzaluna, her rocking tea knife. The lie that love might be irrelevant in any sphere of life, politics or otherwise, is not a new one, but it's a lie. The lie that we need other things beyond love to get the job done or in place of love is not a new one, but it's a lie. The temptation to grab onto other things and use them because they are easier or faster or get us to the ends that we want more quickly or more conveniently, they help us reach the goals that we claim to have, is not a new one. But time and time again, every one of those things has failed. It's ended up doing more harm than the good it purported to bring. None of those things last. None of those things deliver. And they all cost us. They cost us opportunities to bless. They cost us opportunities to live into the good life God made us for. They cost us opportunities to invite others to live into the good life God made them for. Love is the only one that has never failed. Love has always been reliable. Friends, the love of God never fails. It never fails to be the right call to choose love, to act out of love, to live in love, to be guided by love, to approach things from a place of love. Love is reliable. It says so in the passage. We can always rely on God's love as a source both of security and identity, and as a means to bring good and blessing into the world. Love is never outdated. It is never irrelevant. It is certainly not outdated or irrelevant to God. So there's no reason for it to be irrelevant and outdated to us, no matter what people may say. It's relevant in our politics. It's relevant as we approach family conversations that may feel uncomfortable. I'm going to invite us today to embrace love. To embrace love. To let it guide us. To let it seep into us. To let it motivate and shape how we engage in these next few weeks and months. Here are a few ways I want to invite us to respond. The first is I want to invite us to live into God's love for us. Receive belovedness. You can't give out what you haven't received. So as love has not been the central thing that has named you, that has identified you, if you've not embraced the love of God through Jesus, today you have an opportunity to receive your belovedness. Let it be the primary thing that you are named as, the primary thing that shapes your identity and your sense of self. And then I'm going to invite us to love people. And I want to invite us to do that in two ways, because I know some of us have people around us that we're thinking, how am I going to act out of love for this person? It is so hard to love. Or these groups of people, how can I possibly engage in love? I don't have the answer for the particular situation. I don't have the particular tactics you should employ, but I do have maybe a guidance on an approach. And it's a guidance of prayer. I want to give you two prayers to pray that have served me over the years when I found myself in situations where I'm not sure how to live out of love with a group of people or with a particular person. The first is this prayer: God, give me eyes to see how you see blank, this person or this group of people. It helps us grow in love when we can see people as beloved, because that's how God sees them. So ask God to give you eyes to see the people around you, the people who are hard to love as he sees them. And then let that shape how you are to engage out of love. And the second is this, and I'm going to warn you right now, this is a prayer that I've prayed in really hard situations, and God has always answered it. God has always answered it, and it's been challenging to respond to it. It's been challenging to respond to it. God, increase my capacity to love. You may find yourself, as I have, at the limits of how much love we think we can give so-and-so or such-and-such person or this group of people or that group of people. you may feel, I just don't have more love to give. They've just worn me out. Now, I'm not saying there aren't boundaries to set. I'm not saying that there aren't healthy patterns or boundaries that we need to use to be able to engage. But love is never optional. Love is the path. Love is the key to bring blessing, to engage with life. Love is the answer. So if you feel you're at your limit, ask God to increase your limit. Ask God to increase your limit. You may be surprised by what comes on the other side. God will answer this prayer. Now you may say, oh, I missed the one you just put up. That's okay. I'm going to put them all up in just a second. They'll be on the screen. I want you to embrace which one is yours and then put it into practice. Let God's love in you and through you shape how you engage in this season, and let nothing else be the primary thing that guides you.